ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
As night falls in Alice Springs in just a few hours, it'll be the second night in a row the children of that town will be not allowed to be on the streets. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has come out in support of the two-week curfew, hoped to be a circuit breaker after widespread unrest broke out in the central Australian town on Tuesday.
All Australians will be concerned by the scenes that we have seen. There has been a temporary curfew put there in Alice Springs. That is a sensible move and one that the federal government supports.
Others have criticised the move, including Indigenous leader and advocate Olga Havnen, who joins me now. Welcome to Drive.
Hi, welcome.
Olga, Tuesday's events really shocked many, not only in the Alice Springs community, but around Australia, looking at some of that vision, particularly around the Todd Tavern. 150 people, some with blunt and sharp-edged weapons, according to the mayor yesterday, attacking the local pub. Did authorities have any choice but to institute this emergency curfew?
Look, probably not, and I'm not entirely critical of the fact that the curfew has been initiated and put in place. My criticism, I suppose, is that if people think curfews are the silver bullet to fixing crime and lawlessness and to improve community safety, I think we're sadly mistaken.
But I think the idea, though, that this is a circuit breaker, and I think you're dead right, there's going to have to be a widespread understanding of the root causes here. What are those root causes, and what should have the government been looking at to avoid the situation that we're in now?
Well, look, there are a couple of things that I would make as quick observations about that particular incident. And one is, it was probably highly predictable given the nature of the incident that kind of contributed to this riot, as people are describing it, and that is, you know, the unfortunate death of a young person who was involved in a motor vehicle accident, which again, unfortunately, was stolen property. The other co-offenders apparently ran off, left him behind. You know, this will cause enormous conflict between members of those different family groups, and that's exactly what seems to be being played out.
So the NT police dropped the ball on observing or being able to predict that, you think?
Well, I don't think it's just the role of the police either, to be fair, but it was highly predictable that payback of some form or another was likely to happen. Whether that happened in town or out bush or in the remote communities, you know, it just depends on where people are and what's happening on the day. But it would have surely been anticipated by anybody that's been a long-term resident of the Northern Territory or people who have grown up there like I have. So the fact that we don't have these strategies and groups in place to intervene early, to try to defuse situations, to do conflict resolution and try to do this on country with people who have the cultural authority to perhaps find better ways of mediating and resolving these conflicts. So that's one issue of it. But I mean, coming back to the other issue that I have concerns about is that we seem to be targeting and identifying young children as being the main perpetrators and offenders behind all of this events.
Are they
my
not?
My understanding is that there are a number of adults also involved. Absolutely no discussion about the roles of the adults that were involved in this, but there are bigger and deeper issues, and I think this is the main thing from my perspective, that these problems of crime, lawlessness, you know, antisocial behaviour have been a long time in the making and the coming. There are really deeply entrenched pockets of disadvantage and marginalisation, particularly amongst Aboriginal people from remote communities, that has been decades in the making. This didn't happen overnight. And I would go so far as to say that politicians of both persuasions, you know, federal and territory, policymakers and senior public servants ought to hang their heads in shame for what is happening to the territory today.
If the answers to the current problems are so clear and obvious, why have they been avoided, in your view?
I think there's been the argy-bargy about whether or not who's responsible for remote communities, who's responsible for the investments, whether it's in housing and infrastructure and other services. At the time of self-government, there was no real clarity between the Commonwealth and the Territory Government of the day about who had those responsibilities. The initial agreement under self-government was that the NT government would be responsible for the larger communities and the Commonwealth would retain responsibility for the smaller remote communities. Now, none of those communities were ever identified. We have had numerous inquiries and reports into the level of disadvantage that exists in those communities, high rates of overcrowding, incredibly, substandard housing and accommodation, no jobs, you know, a whole multiple generations of young people who don't have a decent education, who have no prospect of jobs or employment. You know, these are really deeply entrenched problems, but nobody seems to want to deal with it. And that requires significant long-term planning and long-term investment.
You've said before that the Northern Territory is on its way to becoming a failed state. Would you see that? Would you want to see some intervention in the NT government, and what would that look like?
Well, I think intervention's probably not quite the word that I'd be comfortable in using, but I do think there needs to be joint planning between the Commonwealth and the Territory. The sad reality is that the Territory as a jurisdiction has the highest proportion of Aboriginal population for any other, compared to any other state. It's got a very small population base, almost no level of capacity to make the investments that are needed. So I think, you know, we've been hamstrung by small population, large geographic areas, and a really low base that we've come off, you know, from the time of self-government. So the kind of investment that happened in major urban centres across the country elsewhere, and particularly on the, you know, southeastern seaboard, we've had decades of investment in major infrastructure and so on, and there's been long-term planning. The Territory has never had that. And I think if we don't do something about it collectively, with the active involvement of Aboriginal people, then we're on a highway to nowhere.
Yeah, what happens next after the curfew is probably more important than what happens now. Indigenous leader and advocate Olga Havenen, good to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Getting in touch with ABC RN is easy. Join the conversation live using the ABC Listen app's call and text features.